looking over John's shoulder. And I was going to get up here this time and maybe try to teach a little algebra, but kind of decided not to, so that Max's prayer would be answered. But anyway, looking over John's shoulder, and you know, I think sometimes when I am studying somebody like this, boy, if I could just sit down for a little while and talk to him and ask him some questions. And it is interesting, in a couple of weeks, my wife and I are planning to go to Israel for a trip. And anyway, a week or so ago, in one of the Sunday school teachers told me that they were talking about, I forget who in the Bible they were talking about in their Sunday school class, and I guess one of the little kids knew that we were going to be going to Israel and asked the question, will Phil and Rosie get to talk to that person? And she said, no, they won't get to talk to him, but they'll see some of the places where we're talking about. But anyway, I just think sometimes if I could just sit down and ask John some questions and get a few things clarified. But it has been a blessing studying from the life of John. And today, this afternoon, I want to start out in the book of Revelation, chapter 12, and just read a couple verses there. John had the privilege of seeing into heaven, and he wrote the book of Revelation. It's an awesome book. A lot I don't understand about it, but understand enough to know that I'm excited about going and being there and seeing that. So for a little while today, and you all are going to help me with this one this afternoon, by the way. I want to read starting with verse 10. And this comes in the context of this great war in heaven where Michael and his angels fought against the dragon the dragon and his angels fought back and all of that. So we're looking at the power of God and the power of Satan and sort of that conflict that happens. And you don't have to look around much in our world today to realize that conflict is still going on. And as church leaders, and you know, as I was studying this, I was trying to think of things from the perspective of an overseer. But also, you know, I'm still a pastor of a church, so maybe some of the stuff I share kind of comes out of that, being a pastor. But you know, we are sort of drawn into this conflict. We become part of this conflict very quickly. As we, you know, because there are people coming to us that are still part of the kingdom of darkness, and we want to see them come into the kingdom of light, and so we're part of that conflict. And there's a couple verses that have just meant so much to me out of Revelation chapter 12, because I want to know how we can be victorious. I want to know how we can fight against and defeat the powers of evil, the powers of Satan. And there's some pretty clear things here about how that happens. Verse 10, then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, now has come the salvation, the power, the kingdom of our God, the authority of his Christ. For the accuser of our brothers who accuses them before our God day and night has been hurled down. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Three things that are given there in overcoming the powers of Satan. The first one, it says, they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb. Now, that's not something we can do, right? That's something that has already happened for us. Jesus Christ came to earth. He gave his life on the cross. And that has to be the very first step in our having victory in this battle against Satan, is the blood of Jesus Christ. The second thing, though, we have a part in, right? the word of their testimony. So for a little bit this afternoon, I want us to talk about the power of a testimony. And then the third part of this, and either one of these three things, you know, we could take the whole time plus some to talk about. The third one is they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. And we kind of talked about that a little bit this morning as we talked about, you know, ministering in boldness. Peter and John, they weren't worried. I mean, they knew it could cost them their lives, and eventually, at least for Peter, it did cost him his life just for being a follower of Christ. But they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. So, the blood of the Lamb, the power of their testimony, or by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. There's power in a testimony. In fact, John, remember the verse that we read last evening out of John chapter 20? John carefully chose the testimonies that he gave in his book, his gospel that he wrote, for what reason? So they would believe, that's the first thing, and then by believing, what would happen?
Have life.
And John said, there's many, many other testimonies I could have given, but these testimonies, I'm putting in my own words, these testimonies were carefully chosen so that people would believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing they would have life through His name. There's power in testimonies. Or maybe I would say there is power in good testimonies. So, you're going to help me. Rosie, come up if you would and write some stuff on the board for us. What makes a good testimony? And so as you think about, you know, I've found several things from the book of John that talk about what a good testimony is, I think. But before I say some that I have, I'm going to open it up for you all to list. What are some of the characteristics of a good testimony? And while you're thinking a little bit, I'll keep talking just a little while you're thinking, but you know, we could all probably talk about meetings that we have been in where the Spirit of God just came down in a powerful way, and often it came kind of as a result of somebody sharing a testimony. And then that touches somebody's life, what God has done, and God works through that. So, who wants to give us the characteristic of a good testimony? Got one in mind? What do you think?
One that builds faith.
What?
One that builds faith.
Builds faith. Okay. Good.
And those that are about Jesus.
Okay.
That really matter to me. I mean, there are a lot of juicy stories out there, biographies, but somehow some people tell their testimony in a way that Jesus is the hero of the story.
Okay. Yeah. So it's about Jesus, or Jesus is the hero. Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. They've encountered Jesus in a powerful way.
Okay.
One that contains current news.
Okay.
Current.
Yeah. Current news, current. Oh, current. Okay, current.
Current stuff.
Current. Okay. That's good. Keep going.
It has to connect with you. It has to connect with you in like circumstances.
So talk just a little more about that. It connects. You mean, okay, so it's like it may relate to the same kind of thing that's happening in my life.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's authentic. It and if If you speak out of what's happening in your life, very likely it's going to touch somebody else in that group because they're probably going through the same thing. Okay?
It needs to be true.
You know, that was, thank you. That was actually the first one I had. I had several of these down, but that was the first one that that I had written down. And I'll just, since you've given that, let me just share the verse that I got that out of in John chapter 21, verse 24. John said, "This is the disciple who testifies to these things and who wrote them down. We know that his testimony is true." John said, "I know what I'm talking about because I saw it happen. It's true." And this actually, I was thinking, it's not unusual for a mission agency to come under fire because for enhancing testimonies. You know, they'll take a testimony and they will enhance that in such a way as to gain whatever kind of support they want to gain. And that's a danger. Okay? Others. Don't want to take a lot more time because I don't have a lot of time, but these are great. Anybody else? Okay, let me
transformation.
What?
Transformation. Change.
Okay. Are you saying that it's a testimony about change that has happened in a person's life or that brings change in somebody else? Or?
Well, no, Joe kind of mentioned it, but it's about Jesus, but it's also, I think he said, how did you say it? Encountering Jesus in a powerful way.
So okay.
I think that aspect of it, that something significant happened.
Okay.
In encountering Jesus.
Yes.
It also needs to come from someone who is trustworthy. I'm not sure how to say that.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say, too. That it needs to somehow line up with the life of the person.
Yes.
I mean,
okay.
It's telling a good story, but then that's where it ends. Yeah, there has to be a congruence between the words and the life for it to really
okay.
End.
Four words. Congruent.
Authentic.
Genuine, congruent.
Authentic. A-U-T-H. Authentic.
Person practices what they preach.
T-I-C.
Okay.
Practice what you preach.
Yeah.
Practice your testimony.
Okay, we'll try to wrap this up. I appreciate that very much, but I encourage us as pastors and as overseers to use the power of a testimony. You know, some church, I know one church that had like a lot of the people from their church write a testimony, and then they put these all together in a booklet and let people read them. But getting up, I know in our church we have each Sunday we have a different person that gets up and does a devotional, we call it. But often it's just sharing a testimony of something that has happened in their life. That's powerful to connect with each other. It kind of tells us how to pray for that person Yeah, so there's power in a testimony. Let's kind of go through these kind of quickly. I said a testimony is true. We talked about that. Carefully chosen so that people will believe Christ. John chapter 20 gives that. Builds faith. And is life-giving. That they might believe and that by believing they might have life in His name. And, you know, another one that I mentioned sort of goes along with this morning's thoughts from Acts chapter 4, courageous. Be willing to, people may think bad about me if they hear sort of something how I used to be and how I am now, but should be courageous. And then, it flows out of our walk with Jesus. Acts chapter 4, they took note of them that they had been with Jesus when Peter and John shared their testimony. Currently, what's happening in our lives? I just wanted to share, it's sort of a testimony or a passion or a prayer. Two things quickly. Stephen, when he was getting ready to give his life for Christ, he sort of shared his testimony of what he was seeing. Remember, he said when he looked up and he said, "I see the heavens open and Jesus standing at the right hand of God." He was basically saying, "I'm ready to give my life if I need to. Here's what I'm seeing." And Saul was right there, watching all of this. In fact, they laid their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. And somehow, the Bible doesn't really say this, but somehow I imagine that Saul was never able to get that picture out of his mind. A man getting ready to go to his death and saying, "I see heaven open and Jesus standing at the right hand of the Father." And I think that played a huge role in Saul's conversion, and not just his conversion, but of him saying, "I'm willing to give my life." Paul, often said, I'm willing to give my life. I'm ready to be offered. I'm ready. And I sort of think he probably often thought back to that testimony of what Stephen was seeing. The power of a testimony. I'll just close out with this quote from Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot, the one who was killed there Ecuador. But sort of through the years, that has been a challenge to me. I've read a lot of his books, but that was just, his life and his story was always a challenge to me. But here's what he said. I don't know when, but anyway, in one of his writings, "I have prayed for new men, fiery, reckless men, possessed of uncontrollably youthful passion, those lit by the Spirit of God. I have prayed for new words, explosive, direct, simple words. I have prayed for new miracles. Explaining old miracles will not do." And I thought about that when he said, "Hey, it's about current stuff. We can tell about what happened back there, but something ought to be happening today that we can tell about." Anyway, he said, "Explaining old miracles will not do. If God is to be known as the God who does wonders in heaven and earth, then God must produce for this generation. Lord, fill preachers and preaching with thy power. How long dare we go on without tears, without moral passions, hatred, and love? Not long, I pray, Lord Jesus, not long." And God wants to continue to do his work, wants his power to go out into the world through our lives. He wants his glory to be seen in the world through us. He wants to continue to give us things to testify about. And there's power in a testimony. Father, I just pray that you would fill us with your power and your love and send us out into the world to just share the good news, to share those testimonies about what you have done in our lives. People will see and be drawn to you. Amen.
When we transitioned off the farm and moved to Canton, Joe was in the process because he overseed both churches.
That's right.
So, anything I've learn good is from you, and anything I've learned bad is from somewhere else. But yeah, talk to us about trends in our churches.
All right, thanks, Darren. You want to pass these out? I have some outline handout for you here. Phil, thank you. Wonderful teaching there. Trends affecting our churches. So September 11, 2001, remember that day? Of course you do, 9/11. I was helping a guy, a friend, butcher a deer, and his wife came down and said, "You got to watch TV, look at this," and we watched, and second plane hit, and then the Pentagon got hit, and I remember thinking, something big is going on. I got to get home. And I rushed home and watched TV there. And then we heard the news that 20 miles away, a plane went down in Shanksville, Flight 93. And I was rattled. I was like, whoa. And went through the day. And then that late afternoon, evening, I went over, drove over to Oakdale Church and in the Amish community. And old Abe Kinsinger was there by the mailbox, hoeing his garden. Old Amish, I think he's a preacher, or was. So I stopped and got our mail, and he was standing right there. And so I said, "Abe, did you hear what happened today?" And he said, "No, I didn't hear anything." And so I told him about what happened, the planes, and then Shanksville. And he said, "Well, there's some Amish families from Somerset that moved over to Shanksville area." He said, "Were any of our people affected?" And I said, "No, I don't think so." Then he looked off in the sky, and I thought he's going to say something really profound. And he did. He said, "Looks like it's going to rain, doesn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it does." And sometimes I envy Abe. I just wish I could be concerned about my own people and not worry about what's out there. But then I remember the legacy that my dad left me, where he, as a young married man, him and my mom, encountered Jesus in a powerful way. And they met Jesus. And my dad said, I remember him saying, "There's just no way that we could stay in the Amish church and just keep this to ourselves. We have to share." So in your outline, these two verses here in 1 Corinthians, we do all we can to win as many as possible. And be sure, Proverbs, you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. And I think that includes, and I don't know, sometimes I think it's a blessing or a curse that I have, this passion. I know years ago we went camping as a family, a van load of kids, and we went to this new campground, never been there, and we set up everything. And I took a couple kids and I took a walk around the campground and scouted everything out. And then I came back and Naomi was quite hurt, rightly so. Do you remember that? Distraught. So where were you? You just abandoned me with all these kids. And I'm like, no, I was scouting out. I was making sure we're okay. I was like, now our kids can go play, you know. And I realize that I'm doing that as a pastor. I'm continually reading, looking, trying to learn what's out there. What are we facing? So this has been my passion. So when Steve asked me to do this talk, I was like, sure, I'll do that. So here's my top 10. And, you know, it's kind of arbitrary. They're not in any order of priority. They're just things that came to me that I think are trends that we should be aware of as a church, as we care for our flocks, and as we do all we can to win as many as possible. You may have a different list. You'll likely not agree with everything I'm going to say here. But, I'll just throw it out there for you to think about. I'm just going to skim over these. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in each one. I just kind of explained what I'm seeing, why I think it's a trend we should be pay attention to. Then we're going to break up into groups and just invite you to those three questions at the bottom there. Talk about them, what you agree, disagree, and how this may, how you could benefit from this. You know, there's a quote out there, the world is changing faster than ever, and we're going to have to adapt faster than ever to just keep up. And related, speaking of the church, and then there's controversy about that. Some say that's just a cliche. I think things are changing pretty rapidly. What my 16-year-old Jewel daughter is experiencing is very different than what my oldest child, Joe Jr., who's 20 years older, his world and Jewel's world are quite different. Things are changing. So here's my list. And I thought it was interesting, the last Beacon article, Beacon magazine, has some of these in here. And so I think the Me Too is first because it's in the Beacon article. And there's an article by Vicky about Lynette Showalter's workshop on the Me Too movement. I think it's a huge trend that every pastor, church should be aware of. I talked to a pastor and an elder a year or so ago about this, and I just came up in passing, and he said, "What's the Me Too movement?" I was like, "Yeah, it's out there." We've talked to our women in church about this. We've referenced it a lot at our elders' meetings. Just a couple of highlights here from Lynette's, from Vicky's article, I guess. There's so many people in our churches and in our communities with stories of sexual pain and violation. Some of you here are perpetrators in our church. That's real. Some of us have secret sexual addictions. The Me Too movement is so politically charged with a liberal agenda, maybe, but I think it's a gift that our culture has handed to us. There's my bias. You may agree or not agree, but we need to talk about this. The secrecy of the church is so wrong. It's got to stop. We don't cover up anymore. We don't brush it aside. We have to deal with it head on. Pretty passionate about that. So CMC has done some work on that. We have ministerial misconduct policy. Hopefully you're aware of that. We just updated that. The next Beacon article or issue is going to be addressing more of that. So it's a trend that's happened in our culture. How are we handling it? Just in Somerset County, a good Christian camp, around Somerset, a couple months ago, the two directors were arrested, good Christian men, because there was a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old that had some kind of sexual encounter at camp. They were immediately sent home. The parents were notified. The parents, the daughter called reported it. They didn't call the police. They were arrested because they failed to report. So we need to be aware of trends, that trend that's going on. Then the second thing is the whole sexual revolution, the LGBTQ. My daughter, Jewel, again, 16, senior in high school, just told me the other week, she said, "Dad, when there's a couple dating in Salisbury School, a very conservative, small school, you assume they're having sex. That's just the norm." I remember in the 80s hearing John White, a psychologist, talk, and he said, he was talking about the sexual revolution, the promiscuity right within the church, and the pastor came to him and said, "You really don't need to give that talk here because we're not dealing with that." And he said after his talk, the pastor's daughter came to him and said, "My boyfriend and I are having sex. What do we do?" So we need to be aware of what's going on there. The pornography is huge. There's men and women in your church that are secretly addicted to pornography. It's a trend. It's just everywhere. You know that. So I read a book recently, Sex, Jesus, and Conversations the Church Forgot. Mo Isom. Anybody familiar with that? I think every pastor should be reading that book. I bought like four copies, and when I went to find one, couldn't find any. I think I gave them all away. But a lady that just wrote, grew up in a church, and her story of being addicted to pornography and just the havoc that it wrecked in her life and the sexual encounters she had. Mo, M-O-I-S-U-M. It's my daughters all, in fact, one of my college daughters gave me the book and said, Dad, you got to read this. And all my daughters have read it, and sons also. So the sexual revolution and how you're handling the LGBTQ, A+, on movement. It's to our shame that the church is known as ostracizing people caught in this. We have a, is this being, this recording is maybe going out? Anyway, I won't mention names, but she, no, it's fine, but we have a lesbian attending, and every Sunday I make it a point to give her a warm welcome and just love on her and pray for her, and hopefully someday she'll be set free. We'll see. The women's equality, this is a little bit more dicey, but you know, oh well, women's liberation movement. So here's my point there. It's huge in our culture. And again, you may or may not agree with me here, but while hopefully as moderator I've made it clear that I am solidly complementarian, that ordination is reserved for men, I'm still there. I'm not planning to change. I'm solidly there. But the patriarchalism that we grew up with, that's so prevalent in our churches, is not biblical. It's not the heart of Jesus. And we used to get by with it in our culture, kind of because culture was kind of there. So we make jokes about women and whatever, and we could get by with it. You can't do that anymore. That has shifted. So somehow we churches have got to pay attention to that, and you can discuss that more in your small group if you'd like. But it's the patriarchalism, that the put down, the minimizing of women. I grew up where in the church it was okay to kind of make jokes about women, to make jokes about blacks, to make jokes about Mexicans. Don't do that anymore. It wasn't right back then, but we got by with it. It's not right today, and if we're going to win as many as possible, we can't do that anymore. And then the Beacon also has an article about sports. The tragedy of, well, our son Philip Morocco got married this summer, and his now wife, her brother, I met him. He's not a Christian, but he teaches in high school. And then I found out he had his PhD in athletics, and he wrote his thesis on the tragedy of year-round sports in high school. I was like, wow. And I was pretty impressed with what he had to say. And so the whole sports craze, particularly how it affects our young people, I'm just really troubled by that. And how do we make disciples of youth when they have year-round sports and their weeknights are taken with school activities and it may be other, you know, dance, whatever. But and then the Sunday sports that are just becoming so common. And how are we addressing that? Discipleship in the church comes second to the other activities of the... It's a disturbing trend. Number five is politics. I don't know if it's worse today. Some people say it is. I have vivid memories of being this young kid, and JFK was running for president, and he was Catholic. And the Antichrist is coming, you know, and everybody needs to get out and vote against him. So is it worse today? I think my sense is the polarization is worse today, where if you voted for Trump, you're not a Christian. Heard that. People say that. And if you did vote for Trump, how could you love Jesus, you know? So we're polarized. Here's my bias on this. Like with Trump's impeachment process going on, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight. It's not my issue. Do I care? Yeah. Do I pray? Yeah. But my issue is how do we love people? How do we win as many as possible? So don't. And I've heard of some CMC churches that have went way beyond what I would do in endorsing a candidate. It's not our issue. Our issue, our politics. Jesus was very political, I think. One could argue that. In the sense, when Jesus said, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. If Caesar is taking something that belongs to God, we get political. We stand up and say, no, Caesar cannot have that. But our issue is not, and I was told I need to read David Swartz's Steve's son's book, what's it called? Moral Minority, where he makes the point that followers of Jesus do not have a political party in the United States. Our party is Jesus. It's his kingdom. So we need to stand up against that. Tony Campolo said, mixing politics and religion is like mixing ice cream and manure. It doesn't affect the manure, but it really messes with the ice cream. So let's just stay out of politics. Einstein said, those who believe religion and politics do not mix, understand neither. I go with Einstein on this one. There's issues we need to engage in. But it's about loving people. It's about bringing justice to the broken, the hurting, and how that affects us. Number six is a church online. And I do a lot of reading, and I like to follow. Many of you I know follow Kerry Newhoff and his blog and writings, and he's done some good work out there on trends. And another one is... Meckelberg, James Emery White, Church and Culture. He has a blog, Church and Culture. I've been following that for years. And so the trend with the online and church online, I don't think, I'll say it. We have to engage in this process somehow. Some churches, well, I don't do that. We don't have a website. Well, okay. But if we want to win as many as possible, then, and I've noticed this at Oakdale, inevitably a new attendee, they've been on our website. They've been watching our sermons. They've been engaging online at some level. And after several weeks or months of that, then they may venture inside our front door. So the website, a good website, is the new front door of the church. And then, and this is Kerry Newhoff talks about the side door. It's, continually hearing, well, I had to work Sunday, but I listened to the sermon online. And a lot of that is happening. I was sick. I was traveling. But then there's the back door, too, where people quit coming. It was like, hey, we missed you. Well, I was watching online. And then inevitably they'll wander off. So that can happen. But it's a trend that we need to address. And then the social media thing goes along with that. I have pastors tell me, I don't do social media. Probably some of you here don't do it. I don't do Facebook. Well, okay, I'll give you that, but I question it. For the first time, we had a funeral yesterday. Not the first funeral, but so I didn't make it last night because of that. But I typically, when somebody dies, I'm calling them, I'm going to see them, the family, you know, making arrangements. But it was a little different situation. I did it all through Facebook this time. I messaged the family members. We were back and forth messaging each other. And I think it was the right thing. So all the time I'm watching Facebook and see somebody Sunday morning, hey, I heard this happened, and praying for you, and make comments. And it's a great tool. I'm not into Twitter and Instagram, but I'm probably behind there. Some of you, I'm sure, are. But those are tools, they're trends, along with smartphones and Uncle Google. You don't get by with your sermon saying stuff in sermons anymore. If you don't have your facts right, this young smart aleck will come after church and he'll say, Joe, I Googled what you just said, and, you know. And the information, I'm not sure how all that it affects us, but it's a huge trend that, you know, the whole issue of do you have Wi-Fi accessible during your church service? We do. Some of you don't. People, I'm preaching and people are doing this. I have no idea if they're looking at Facebook or what. But so it's a trend that we need to talk about, pay attention to. The declining church attendance, you know what I mean? Are you facing it? Not just numbers, but I've heard this from several churches, and I'm one of those that are lamenting, what do I do? I have elders that are skipping church. They're making it twice a month. They're going to their sports games, their kids' sports, they're working. And Carrie Newhoff did a great article a year or two ago about, he lists the reasons of declining church attendance is that we have affluence, we have options. We can go away weekends, the kids' activities, we travel. We have families at Oakdale with blended families. They shared custody, and their kids are with them every other weekend. And so we see the kids every other weekend. And then the cultural disappearance of guilt. Yeah, I make it to church twice a month. What's wrong with that? That's normal. And I'm like, how can you be an elder? And so I hear it all over. Along with that, the whole volunteerism is just people don't have time, don't want to volunteer. I was at an area ministerium, the high school superintendent or the school superintendent was there, and he said, it's changing how we do school. People do not volunteer at schools. And then I talked to the local Lions Club president. He said, our membership is bigger than ever, but our events, we have a few old people that volunteer. And then last week, our BBS team said, we're not sure we can do BBS anymore. We just can't have the volunteers. And one of the VBS directors this last summer was so upset that she quit coming to church for 2 months after VBS because she would beg people to help with VBS. And she said, and then I'd on the way to VBS, I'd see them sitting on their porch eating. And I said, I just couldn't handle it. So a trend. And then the distrust of authority and institutions. That's nothing new, but I think it's growing. It's getting worse. Just don't assume people trust the pastor. And what denomination are you a part of? And if you can wiggle out of that one, you're better off. But if you have to say you're a part of a denomination, then good luck. That's an oversimplification, but that trend is there. I'm not a part of organized religion. Oh, I get so tired of that. It's like fingernails scratching on a chalkboard when someone says that to me. That's my list. Any questions or something before we break up into groups?
I think it's time for a good testimony.
Well, I had a list of positive trends, and then I said, well, I'll scratch that. I just want to give you that. I love Tom's, just the songs about the church, and we're going to continue growing and be victorious.
Well, what's one good trend? Just one.
One good trend. Here's one I had. I love how the young people are passionate for justice, for making a difference. Have you seen that among young people? They want to do something. I think that's exciting. What's another good trend? Thank you.
And we're going to talk about money in the next session. Which is good, right, Earl?
Absolutely.
All right. So, just break up into groups of about six or eight.